to be in the house of the Lord. We're studying in the book of Proverbs, chapter 23. Proverbs, chapter 23. We have 35 verses in this chapter. We shall endeavor to deal with them. We'll divide this chapter up into about three different points with a number of subdivisions under the points. Read the chapter in its entirety, then we'll come back and try to get it at least in some semblance of an outline so that we can study it. And I think we'll find some interesting things here for us today. As we've gone through the book of Proverbs, there has been much instruction and admonition in it, and I think that this chapter will be just as interesting as the others have been. Again, the nature of the book is poetry, and it's saying a great deal with very few words in a very brief fashion, yet discernible fashion. And it is to give instruction, subtlety to the simple, and so I'm thankful that we have the Proverbs to study. So when thou sittest to eat with a ruler, consider diligently what is set before thee, and put a knife to thy throat, if thou be a man given to appetite. Be not desirous of his dainties, for they are deceitful meat. Labor not to be rich. Cease from thine own wisdom. Wilt thou set thine eyes upon that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings. They fly away as an eagle toward heaven. Eat thou not the bread of him that hath an evil eye, neither desire thou his dainty meats. For as he thinketh in his heart, so is he. Eat and drink, saith he to thee, but his heart is not with thee. The morsel which thou hast eaten shalt thou vomit up, and lose thy sweet words. Speak not in the ears of a fool, for he will despise the wisdom of thy words. Remove not the old landmark, and enter not into the fields of the fatherless, for their Redeemer is mighty. He shall plead their cause with thee. Apply thine heart unto instruction, and thine ears to the words of knowledge. Withhold not correction from the child. For if thou beatest him with the rod, he shall not die. Thou shalt beat him with the rod, and shall deliver his soul from hell. My son, if thine heart be wise, my heart shall rejoice, even mine. Yea, my reins shall rejoice when thy lips speak right things. Let not thine heart envy sinners, but be thou in the fear of the Lord all the day long. For surely there is an end, and thine expectation shall not be cut off. Hear thou, my son, and be wise, and guide thine heart in the way. Be not among wine bibbers, among riotous eaters of flesh. For the drunkard and the glutton shall come to poverty, and drowsiness shall clothe a man with rags. Hearken unto thy father that begat thee, and despise not thy mother when she is old. Buy the truth and sell it not. Also wisdom and instruction and understanding. The father of the righteous shall greatly rejoice, and he that begetteth a wise child shall have joy of him. Thy father and thy mother shall be glad, and she that bare thee shall rejoice. My son, give me thine heart, and let thine eyes observe my ways. For a whore is a deep ditch, and a strange woman is a narrow pit. She also lieth in wait as for prey, and increaseth the transgressors among men. Who hath woe? Who hath sorrow? Who hath contentions? Who hath babblings? Who hath wounds without cause? Who hath redness of eyes? They that tarry long at the wine, they that go to seek mixed wine. Look not thou upon the wine when it is red, when it giveth his color in the cup, when it moveth itself aright. At the last it biteth like a serpent and stingeth like an adder. Thine eyes shall behold strange women, and thine heart shall utter perverse things. Yea, thou shalt be as he that lieth down in the midst of the sea, or as he that lieth upon the top of a mast. They have stricken me, shalt thou say, and I was not sick. They have beaten me, and I felt it not. When shall I awake? I will seek it yet again. All right, we'll notice in the first 8 verses of this particular chapter of the book of Proverbs that we are not to be overcome by the world, or not to be overtaken and enthralled with the world. And in the first instance, or the first verse, we find that we are to give proper consideration of self in the presence of rulers. I would remind you of the book of Daniel and that first chapter of Daniel, when those 3 young men were chosen to be trained as counselors in the University of Babylon and were to be taught the tongue of the Chaldeans, to be brought in before King Nebuchadnezzar and to be among his that would counsel him. They were to be fed a certain diet for this prescribed 3 years that they were to be in the school, and they refused to partake of those dainties and that particular fare that came from the table of the king. And certainly we see in this verse a proper consideration of self in the presence of rulers. We dare not be overtaken with just the dainties of this world. You'll notice that when thou sittest to eat with a ruler, consider diligent what is before thee. And then, I think, a very strong admonition, and put a knife to thy throat if thou be a man given to appetite, or to be careful about partaking of that table and overindulging and being enthralled with the dainties of a table. Now, I know that it is probably somewhat appealing to people. However, most of us that grew up in rural America developed a rather simple diet, and our tastes do not vary. I have never had any great desire to eat snails and slugs with the French. That has never been something that has appealed to me. I understand that escargot is nothing but just a great big snail. And so I have never had that taste in my palate, and I'm aware of the fact that the French cuisine is probably very good food and so forth, but things of that nature, it oftentimes is appealing because there is a unique table set and there's great fanfare made about the foods, and it's amazing what people eat. You know, I was just thinking in preparation for this lesson that, you know, in the Orient they eat grasshoppers, and we use them for fish bait. But you have to develop a taste for these particular dainties of the elite. There are certain dietary things that are set out that are appealing. Probably the most of us would never really be satisfied with the fish eggs, the caviar, because we have not developed that taste. But but there's just something about that and a status symbol that goes with it. And so we as believers in particular today are not to be over engrossed with the world and be enticed by those things and think that, boy, I wish I could live in this circle. We are to, as he said, put a knife to our throat if there'll be a man given to appetite, because there's always the danger of being caught up with the dainties of this world and the niceties of this world and the desire to move in those circles. There are certain influences that will grow on you, and I will elaborate on that just a moment. If you're not careful, and whenever I grew up, I was around people that drank, and one of my friends, his dad ran they don't call them honky-tonks anymore, but honky-tonk and beer joints, all it was a dive on the county line. Park County was dry and Tarrant County was wet, so as close as they could build the building to Parker County, they did, in the edge of Tarrant County. But if you get in those atmospheres, there's something about that that thralls you, and eventually you long for those things. And this is the warning that we see here. Be careful as we are exposed to the dainties, and we sit in the place of those who are in authority and rulers, because it influences us, and we may develop that kind of an appetite and not be able to afford that appetite. In verse 3 it said, "Be not desirous of his dainties, for they are deceitful meat." And that is more than just food for the table, but all of that particular grandeur of life. There are people today that would give their right arm plumb to the shoulder to get to move circles in Hollywood. But if you look at those people, it's deceitful, because you find very few people that are honestly happy. You find a lot of them that are suicidal, whether they know it or not. And a lot of young people have literally died in overdoses and in drunken stupors because they have been caught up in that world. It entices, and there's a warning here. So we come back to our original premise in these eight verses. Don't be overcome by the world. Proper consideration of self in the presence of rulers, or though in a higher circle of affairs. I think it's well to develop the taste for the place that God's given you, and that's in the house of God. We'll deal with other things in a moment. Don't be overcome with the world, because riches are uncertain in verse 4. Labor not to be rich, cease from thine own wisdom. Wilt thou set thine eyes upon that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings. They fly away as an eagle toward heaven. Now, I've known some of that experience. I've never made a lot of money, but I know how money and riches seem to be able to grow wings and fly away. We're talking about a job. We always talk about, we like to find somebody with deep pockets and long arms. It means we want to have plenty of money and able to reach it. But the truth of the matter is that riches have a way of growing wings and flying away. And it does not satisfy. He said, labor not to be rich. Cease from thine old wisdom. Or quit looking at it in our light and what we want, but look at it in the light of the Word of God. Again, I would invite your attention to those four young men that came from Judea to Babylon at the request of King Nebuchadnezzar by force of his army, that they considered the matter and they said, just give us the pulse eater, give us the common food. And the Bible tells us that they were fatter and fatter in flesh than those that partook of the king's fare. And not only that, but Nebuchadnezzar in later times found them far better counselors. Now, I think there are certain exposures in life that are not good for us in a number of areas. And one is that I'm persuaded that there are certain foods that do affect the mind. And certainly it affects life overall. And so sometimes the fare of the Lord is the thing we need to look at. Cease from our own wisdom. Invariably the wisdom of the world is to get all you can all you can get, hold it, keep it. But it has a way of growing wings and flying away, he said, as an eagle, even toward heaven. So there are uncertainties in riches. There is a certainty in the Lord and in his word. Heaven and earth, Jesus said, shall pass away, but my word shall not pass away. John said, this world with all of its lust shall pass away. So we need then to be not overcome with the world. And then do not partake of the bread of a man with an evil eye or a bad intent. I need to deal with this matter of an evil eye, because there's the idea today about the evil eye, that certain people have it. And if they look at you, then you're hexed, that there is a curse placed on you. And I don't believe that to start with, but there are people that believe that. And sometimes because of just a physical infirmity and possibly a strange look in an eye, people assume to have an evil eye. And that's not what it's talking about at all in this case. It is talking about the man who has an evil heart and that looks at things in a different fashion or in an evil fashion. We're not talking about somebody that can put a hex on you. And I would say this, that I don't think it'd be wise to keep company with a soothsayer, a fortune teller. I went over one time just to look at a truck I wanted to buy, and when I got there, I found out it was at one of these palm readers, or they call them Indian readers, house, and I wasn't even comfortable even going around the house and talking with her. But I think that, because if you get to an evil eye, I think probably you're getting close there. But in the modern, in what we often hear the term used, the evil eye, I think those people, they don't have an evil eye, they have an evil intent and a wicked intent. So I would not recommend that you go to the table. But here again, let me go into a little bit of detail here so that we can understand what he's saying. Eat not thou the bread of him that hath an evil eye, neither desire thou his dainty meats. For as he thinketh in his heart, so is he. In other words, he's wicked in his heart, and he thinks wickedly, and he intends wickedness. And you're there not because he's anxious to feed you, but you're there simply as a means of him accomplishing something. And every morsel that he sets before you, and he says with a smile on his face, enjoy yourself and eat and drink. There's an ulterior motive for you being there and him feeding you, and he begrudges every bite that you take. Yet you are necessarily there because he feels an obligation to do something to put you into a position of obligation to him. And so do not partake of the bread of a man with a bad intent. In other words, do not obligate yourself to him. So don't be overcome with the world. The morsel, he said, which thou hast eaten, shalt thou vomit up and lose thy sweet words. Well, it'll cost you in the long run to do that. And so be careful about the company that you keep and that I would keep. All right, in verse 9 now, this is a verse that we stand on. We divide the chapter into three divisions. This is one division by itself, and we simply entitle it like this: don't cast pearls before swine. Speak not in the ears of a fool, for he will despise the wisdom of thy words. Our Lord taught in the New Testament that we are not to cast our pearl before swine. There are people that appreciate the things of God, and there are people that do not appreciate the things of God. And you might say, well, preacher, are we not to constantly endeavor to witness to people? Well, Paul didn't seem to think so. He said there are certain ones after a second or a third admonition, then just abandon or leave alone because they do not have any respect for your position, the Lord's position, nor his word. And so here the man Solomon said, speak not in the ears of a fool, for he will despise the wisdom of thy words. He will not appreciate them and actually will literally mock those words. I do not think that it's wise nor right at certain times to debate the atheist and the ungodly. If it can be handled tastefully in a controlled circumstance, that's one thing. But you'll find by and large that there'll be no respect whatsoever for you nor your position. And therefore, be careful about casting the pearl before swine. If there's an honest soul and a seeker, then you do your best to enlighten them for whatever time it takes, if it takes a lifetime. But somebody that is an avowed enemy of God and persists in that, they will mock the very precious name of Jesus Christ that you love. And so choose your company and guard your words. Share the gospel when given opportunity, but if you see that it is despised and rejected and that every effort will be made to malign the very precious name of Jesus Christ, then don't speak in the ear of that fool or share with them. There is a matter of discernment and a time to speak and a time to be silent. And so I think there's a certain admonition here. And then we have in verses 10 on through verse 35, varied and sundered instruction, as we put it in our outline, because there are a number of subjects that are touched upon. in verses 10 and 11. And God seems to speak of this often, so I think that we'll have to speak of it as we go through. And a number of the things that we'll find in these verses have already been spoken of already in the book of Proverbs. But the Lord seems to want to emphasize them again, and we will too. We certainly see that don't take undue advantage of orphans. God has spoken of this time and again. He said, remove not the old landmark and enter not into the fields of the fatherless, for their Redeemer is mighty. He will plead their cause with thee. Now you ask me, what is the landmark? Well, it's a property line. Certainly, there are times, and you've heard of it and read of it, where there would be a person that is an executor of a will and given a particular responsibility and entrustment and an overseer of an estate for a child, and by the time that child gets up to the age that they ought to get that inheritance, it's gone because it's been pilfered away. That orphan not having control of it, and certainly a child does not need to be put in control of vast amounts of money, unless he's like my son Bobby. He seemed to be able to hold on to money pretty well. He had a philosophy about him when he was young, and we went on vacation one time, and he carried, I believe it was a $5 bill. And everywhere we went, he said, well, Dad, can you pay for this? I don't want to break this five. He got home with the same $5 he started with, so he made it pretty well. But most young folks are not going to have money like that. So there needs to be an executor or something of that endowment. But there's an admonition of those that would take advantage of that fatherless. And if there was a field and the neighbor were given that entrustment to oversee the estate, the inheritance of that younger person, and he sees that he can move this landmark and claim a number of feet into the field of that fatherless child, nobody else might notice it, but the Lord does. You see, the Lord said here, for their Redeemer is mighty, he shall plead their cause with thee, or it'll come back to you. And so there's certainly an admonition here to not take undue advantage of orphans. And then in verses 12 through 14, teach a child and save his life. Now this is contrary to the psychology of today. The child psychologist today said, oh, do not correct the child. Let them develop. Well, my mom and dad fortunately did not know that. And therefore they went ahead and took in hand to correct, and they probably saved my life. And if you'll think about it, it probably saved your life. A lot of young people today that are left to themselves are dying in the streets. So we can see the reality of and fulfillment of this. But let's look at it for a moment. He said, withhold not correction from the child, for if thou beatest him with the rod, he shall not die. Certainly, there is a measure of instruction and correction that is necessary. Immediately, there's in the mind of many today, when you make such a statement as Solomon has made, oh, there's brutality and abuse of the child. There are certain areas of the body that can be beat on, or it's designed for that. And it'll have a good effect. It's certainly necessary. But you'll notice he said, thou shalt beat him with a rod and shall deliver his soul from hell. Now, I think that there is a spiritual connotation here. But I think if we look closely at the word Sheol, it means the grave. We very well may save that child from a young life. I think there are times that you have to take some desperate measures. Unfortunately, my dad smoked in his life earlier days, and the only reason he ever quit smoking was that he had surgery one time and they gave him something that affected his body chemically, and he'd get deathly sick every time he smoked, and so he had to quit smoking, but he didn't want to. He never had any intention of ever quitting smoking. And that influenced me, and so I started smoking at an early age, and fortunately the Lord gave me grace when I was about 21 to quit it. I started when I was about 11, and I knew it was hurting me even at that early age. I could tell it in the wintertime especially that it was affecting me, and I tried to quit it for some time, but the Lord finally gave grace. But I'd appreciated it now if somebody had taken a rod to me and driven me away from that, because a lot of them that started at that age today, it leads to other things, and ultimately some of them are dead by the time they're 20, 21 years of age. You see the possibilities of saving a life. If you have a child that is prone to get in the street, it's sure we better take a rod to him and drive him out of the street than to let a truck run over him. You see, actually the intent of the writer is that there's a need of correction in life. A child's not born with enough sense to know what's right and wrong. They have to be taught. Usually they can choose the wrong and find the wrong, but sometimes it takes some direction to find the right, and if we're careful in our lives, we'll teach them and lead them to the right. Teach a child and save his life. And let me say just an aside, and I'll go on because I don't want to belabor the point, but I think today that many of the tragedies and the death of young people is because they've not been taught. One of my Bible college professors had a philosophy about him, and I think he's right. He said he made it a rule that he had not let his children stay out past 12 o'clock. He said there's not anything more that can go on up in the dark after 12 o'clock at night, and he probably had a good philosophy about him. And so I think there are many children out in this day and time which we live that ought not be, and had they proper instruction and correction, that they'd be home where they belong, and they wouldn't have a gun in hand killing somebody or getting killed. That's free. I don't charge you a thing for that this morning. But I think that we need to teach a child and save his life. We're losing a generation, and we've lost already one generation, and we're losing another generation, and you can't lose very many until you've lost a nation. All right, teach a child and save his life. Verses 15 through 18, fear the Lord. My son, if thine heart be wise, my heart shall rejoice, even mine. Yea, my reins shall rejoice when thy lips speak right things. Let not thine heart envy sinners, but be thou in the fear of the Lord all the day long. For surely there is an end, and thine expectation shall not be cut off. Just an admonition to fear the Lord, because there is an end to life. And to the unsaved, there's an end to expectation. But if we fear the Lord all the day long, or the Lord is the center of our lives, even in death, there is an end even to life as we know it here on earth for the believer, but the expectation is not cut off. You know, a lot of things are not really going to change for a believer as he steps out of this life into that which is to follow, except that he'll be at home with the Lord. But as far as his purpose and intent of life, if the Lord is before his eyes and before his face all day long, if he is the center of our life and the focus of our life here, then it will not be very difficult to find pleasure in going home and standing in his presence. And so we say, fear the Lord. There's great benefit, because there ultimately does come the end of life, or is in verse 18, for surely there is an end. In other words, things change. There comes a time and a marked point in history when things change as far as this life is concerned. And if we have given ourselves to the world, then our expectation is cut off, because we are out of reach of the world that we have loved and have taken to the depths of our heart. But if we fear the Lord, then that is not lost to us. And then in verses 19 through 21, don't keep wrong company. Hear thou, my son, and be wise, and guide thine heart in the way. Be not among winebibbers, among riotous eaters of flesh. For the drunkard and the glutton shall come to poverty, and drowsiness shall clothe a man with rags. If you don't believe that, you go down to the rescue mission down on Quincy Street and spend a few nights in the services there, and you'll find exactly this. The men that come in there, and the women the same way, they come off of the street. They just, in that particular mission, they don't take them in and let them spend the night, because they don't have the facilities for the women. And by and large, thank the Lord, there are more men on the streets than there are women. But once in a while there are women there, but you see them come in rags, and they have no self-respect anyway, so they don't care what to wear. And the mission will take their old dirty clothes, give them a change of the same size of clothes, and they'll just simply exchange clothes with them and wash the ones and put them back in the racks for the next fellow that comes along. But the company that we keep, likely a person will not become an alcoholic if he's not around drinkers and so forth. And a person very well may not be influenced to be a glutton unless he's around people that it arises either flesh, again, that it's more than just coming to a table to find a sufficiency for the body, but this is learning to love food and put that as a God before us in our lives. And the drunkard and the glutton both have great problems because it comes to poverty in the life. So be careful about the company that we keep. And then in verses 22 through 25, let truth guide you and don't compromise. Hearken unto thy father that begat thee, and despise not thy mother when she is old. Buy the truth, and sell it not. Also wisdom and instruction and understanding. The father of the righteous shall greatly rejoice, and he that begatteth a wise child shall have joy of him. Thy father and thy mother shall be glad, and she that bare thee shall rejoice. Buy the truth, and sell it not. You ask me this morning, what do you mean, sell the truth? How can you sell the truth? Well, let me give you a Bible illustration. A man named Judas. He knew the Lord. He had the truth. He kept company with Jesus Christ. And he figured he was worth the price of a slave. He sold him for 30 pieces of silver. And whatever you will compromise your conviction for, that's what you put on as a price for truth. What does it take to make you tell a lie? How many dollars does it take in a business transaction to cause you to fudge and to tell an untruth that you might consummate the business? That's what truth is worth to you. And I trust that you'll sell it at no price. There are particular convictions that we need to hold to at whatever the cost. Here the Solomon that wrote this book said in another place, there are those that swear to their own hurt and yet perform the doing of it. They have certain convictions and standards, and they will not compromise. And so let truth guide you, and don't compromise. If we apply that to the Bible, don't compromise it. There are certain things that are said, and certainly then don't compromise it. Give you an example of that was out in public view. Jimmy Carter was president of the United States. And he had been raised up in a Southern Baptist church down in Georgia. He didn't believe in drinking. He was taught that way and raised up that way. But when he got to the White House, the question arose, would he serve wine at the table when the dignitaries from foreign countries came? And he decided to do so. I would have far more appreciated if he had said, no, you can drink iced tea or water. I think it's right. Don't compromise the truth just for the sake of the company that's coming. If they know your conviction and your stand, most people come to my house, and all of them are going to find it out. When they come there, they're not going to get a beer. They're not going to get a glass of wine. They might get some Honduran coffee and a glass of iced tea, but they'll not get beer and wine, and so they don't expect that. And I see no reason why it would not apply in every apply. So don't compromise. In other words, if you have convictions or Bible-based convictions, just live by them. And if folks got to have a beer, they can go down to stock and go and buy their own. Try to talk them out of it if you can, but anyway, that's the position to take. Let the truth guide you. Don't ever compromise. Don't sell it. All right, then we have in verses 26 through 28, immorality is dangerous. Immorality is dangerous. He said, my son, give me thine heart, and let thine eyes observe my ways, for a whore is a deep ditch, and a strange woman is a narrow pit. She also lieth in wait for a prey, and increaseth the transgressors among men. Certainly we see today, and I think because of the influence of the far-range media, that morals have been compromised in our land today. Convictions are not held that were once held. And therefore, it has brought great distress to our nation. And so there's danger in immorality. And then in verses 29 through 35, there is the disaster of drunkenness. Disaster of drunkenness. Probably if there was one blight on our society that stands out today, it's drunkenness. And there's a warning here. In verse 29, there are several questions that are asked. It said, who hath woe? Who hath sorrow? Who hath contentions? Who hath babbling? Who hath wounds without cause? Who hath redness of eye? I mean, several things are asked here. Who is this that is described for us? Who has woe and sorrow and contentions and babblings and wounds without cause? Now, I am persuaded there are those that have wounds for a cause. There were men that came out of every war that was ever fought to defend this great nation of ours, and they, many of them wounded, but it was for a cause. I would hate to think that a man would lose his arm or his sight or his foot and be lame all of his life without a cause. So there are certain causes in life, I think, that are probably even worth life itself. I read in history of believers that took the position that their testimony of Jesus Christ was worth whatever it cost. And they took that stand and they stood, which I think is right. But there are certain folks who have wounds without any cause. I saw a man at the age of 35 tied into a bed, gnawing his tongue and pulling at the straps, because he had given his life to this very thing, drunkenness. His grandfather influenced him when he was just a young man. And taught him to drink beer when he was probably not in his teens yet. And thought it was cute when he said, well, I've got to have it, when he talked about having a beer. And laughed at it. But I think if that grandfather could have lived long enough to see the death of that grandson, he would have broken his heart. Who hath wounds without cause? And no reason. A life destroyed. Health gone. Snaggle tooth. Wounded. And for no cause. Absolutely thrown away. Life wasted. Well, the answer to all of these questions are, the man has woe that has sorrows, hath contentions, and babblings, and wounds without cause, and redness of eye. They that tarry long at the wine, they that go to seek mixed wine. Those that give themselves to alcohol, they'll have all of the troubles that are presented here. You ask me why we are teetotalers? That's why. Because there's a price to be paid. We look on it here. He said, look not on thou on the wine when it is red. Now, in Bible times, in the day of Solomon, the red wine was considered the best. I'm not a connoisseur of wine, so I don't know. I think now a lot of people prefer white wines, and a lot of people just prefer wine. Some prefer beer, and some prefer whiskey, and some will drink anything, including bay rum alcohol, I mean bay rum Herol. Just whatever they can get. Some will drink vanilla. Some will even drink wood alcohol and go blind. They prefer various things in life. But he said, look not on the wine when it is red, when it giveth its color in the cup, when it moveth itself aright, or when it's fermenting and fermented. Nothing wrong with good, clean grape juice, but when it's got the alcohol content, it'll bite like a serpent and sting like an adder. Thine eyes shall behold strange women, and thine heart shall utter perverse things. It leads to a lapse of morals, and it leads to even denial of the Lord himself. So there's dangers in this, a disaster of drunkenness. Yea, thou shalt be as he that lieth down in the midst of the sea, unstable. Did you ever see a real stable drunk? No. It's like a man trying to lie down in the sea or lie on the top of a mast. I never did try to lie down and sleep on top of a mast, but I imagine that'd be a chore. Be in an unstable place. They have stricken me, thou shalt say, and I was not sick. They have beaten me, and I felt it not. When shall I awake? But then again, here's the disaster of it. It actually is habit forming. He said, I will seek it yet again. I don't know how many Reformed drunks I've seen on early Monday morning, but by noon and mid-afternoon, they're ready to drink again. They got up with a headache. I'm quitting. I'll never drink again. But they sought it again